The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International. Starman. This is our 11th episode, and we're going to be talking about Starman number 10. You know, what's going to be interesting is, in I think a few episodes, issues from now, just in case people are wondering, we're going to, there's other aspects of Starman that aren't in the actual Starman proper series. There's like some of the showcase issues and other little mini series that we're also going to go into. So that's why we keep on saying the episode number and which one. Because if it was just, it's just straight up Starman, then we could say, we're talking Starman 10, and I don't know. Right. It's gonna be a ride. It's going to be a ride.
Yeah. And if you try Googling the version of Starman that we're reading, you can't just Google Starman. It has to be Starman Volume 2.
Yes. Right. Yes.
Yeah.
I've never read read the volume one. I think I randomly had one issue of it as a kid. Like, just somehow you get comic books without really knowing how or why.
Yeah. I know, right? Yeah. That happened too. Okay, and that's
pretty much it. I realized as I was saying, like, I don't have a point to that story, but I was like, I did have, like, one random issue. And then I keep on thinking about how Tony Harris called us out, or called me out, for not knowing the origin of David.
So that's where that's from. Okay. Yeah.
So, okay. Starman number 10 has a cover date of August 10th, and its title is The Day Before the Day to Come.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cryptic.
No. So, just in case you're wondering, our loyal listeners, or hopefully occasional listeners, who knows, I took a little bit of a look at what was happening on August of 95, and, there was a few things. I pulled some things that kind of had the most resonance with me, and that was, there was the 50th anniversary of the atomic bombings in Japan.
Oh, right.
Was observed. Also, that same month, Microsoft released Windows 95.
What's the sound? I forgot.
If that's the one I remember the Windows 95. I always thought that their sounds for, like, the opening and the closing were backwards. Uh-huh. Because I remember the opening sound being like a type of thing. That it almost sounded like a little sad, and like the closing was like a boo-doo type of little noise. It was like, ha-ha, yay, you're closing off this computer. And I just always thought, like, wow, shouldn't that be backwards? Windows 95, did you ever use that one, or...?
I did.
Because that was the good one, right?
Yeah, it was better than 98, I think.
Yeah, like, I remember, like, it just being cool, and I looked up, and it was... That was the one that, like, kind of got rid of DOS, and just kind of merged Windows. Right. And it did stuff like the task bar, and the start bar, and all those other things.
Yeah, it was really classic. I just went on YouTube to listen to it, the startup sound.
Sing it.
It's it goes like ring, 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 ring,
ding, ding. and see, it sounds a little sad even when you sing it while giggling. Speaking of sad news, August of 95 was also when baseball great Mickey Mantle died of cancer at 63.
Oh. Yeah. Mickey Mantle. I don't know who he is. I'm sorry.
I know he's a baseball player. I know he's kind of a cultural icon. And I don't, even someone like me who doesn't really follow professional baseball, just knows he kind of, you know, left a mark on pop culture. It's kind of like him and Joe DiMaggio, another just kind of famous baseball player, were just kind of household names, even if you didn't really know baseball. So I was like, oh, that's sad.
I see.
I'm sure there's a lot of baseball fans who know more about baseball. I hope who, if they listen to this, would probably be going like, what do you mean? He did all these great things. And I'm just going like, I know of him because I existed in the world.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, I've just Googled him, and it says that he's an iconic baseball player with immense talent.
Yes.
Okay.
There was an episode of Seinfeld just dedicated in a way to... Not him after he died, but before he died, of them seeing Mickey Mantle in donut shops and talking about how he eats donuts, you know, with such focus that he couldn't be bothered.
I see. Well, quick fact about why I, you know, am not familiar with baseball. It's because I'm from Singapore, and we were a British colony. So a lot of the sports that a lot of major sports in Singapore are actually a lot more British. Mm. So there's a lot of soccer, there's a lot of hockey and netball. Netball, I don't think you might. A lot of people don't know what netball is.
Yeah, like I think I've seen it. Like I always get confused. Netball's the one where you throw it through the hoop, but it's not basketball, right?
That's right. It's actually for women. It was made to be, I think, a ladies' game, like a gentleman ladies' game.
Obviously, they can't play the same games. I mean, that would just be ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, back in the, I mean, you know, in British colony and everything, I don't know, but hockey and soccer is really big in Singapore. So table tennis, I don't know if that's a very British thing, but the major sports in Singapore are a lot different from the US, and baseball is definitely not one of them.
The
major sports.
How about cricket?
Oh, yeah, there are people who play cricket, but it's not as big in Singapore as in India, even though we were both, you know, British colonies. I would say that basketball is the only one that sort of, like, gained even ground in Singapore. Like, you know, because we knew it was a very American thing, but it was a lot of people still played it because I think it's because of the whole Asian... The thing that took Asia by storm with Slam Dunk and everything.
This Japanese anime. The anime and the manga,
Yep. So, ladies and gentlemen, that is why I do not know who Mickey Mantle is.
But you know who you do know about? Jack Knight Starman.
I was going to say Jack Knight.
Oh, did you do it? Too much of a pause.
Ah, damn it. Comedy timing. Okay.
You know the secret to good comedy, right?
Uh-huh. What is it?
Time. Oh, dang it, I messed it up.
Okay. It's okay. It's okay. We'll get the hang of it. All right. What's next?
Do you want to tell us about the synopsis of issue 10?
Of course. So I'm next. Okay. Yeah. All right. So Starman 10, Starman Volume 2, Issue 10, right? Did I say that right?
You did.
You're such a noob. Okay. All right. So let's begin. A very fast-paced issue. Yeah. Da-da-da. It opens right in the middle of things with the Shade coming to Jack and telling him about the new villain he has to face. this new villain, his name is Merit, and he's some sort of like demonic immortal hitman, which is not too far from the Shade, in fact, when you think about it. But Jack's got more pressing stuff on his mind. Nash, who's escaped from prison, whom he knows bears a grudge against him, and will therefore come looking for him, so she's on his mind. Then Jack gets a call from his crush. Yeah, a superhero called Jade, and runs off to help retrieve her friend, Solomon Grundy, a.k.a. sewage plying dude who eats frogs. Yeah, that's really, I was really surprised. Okay, but let's save that for later. We get a little bit of Ted and Michael, and finally, Michael says something in English! And it's like, yay! And oh, it was drawn so well, we shall talk about that later. Yes. And we also find out that Jack wants to bring Solomon to Ted. So, good luck with that, Jack. Or maybe we should say, good luck, Ted, new babysitter of very special people. he keeps babysitting all these. Okay, so we also get a bit of Charity in this issue. Remember her?
Oh,
colorful lady! Yeah! Rainbow lady from the alley who can see the future. That's Charity. And so he meets her, and then he also meets another character he can't get along with in Charity's shop. And it's pretty obvious that we're going to see her again, I think, with the exchange that they had. And then towards the end of the story, you find out that Nash is up to no good. She basically pulls off like this extreme makeover, but we can't really see the makeover on this experiment on herself. And it looks like trouble is brewing in Opal City as we get a glorious 2-page spread. It was amazing at the end where all the main characters of the new story arc line up and we are teased for what's to come. Yeah! That's my synopsis.
You know, I gotta say, based on that synopsis, I would guess you really enjoyed this issue.
I did! I did. Oh, it sounded like a cat.
No, I liked it too.
Okay. Yay! Stamp of approval.
Huzzah! Shall we start at the cover?
Please, please, please! Who is this? Oh, this must be Solomon Grundy, right?
That is Solomon Grundy, born on a Monday.
What?
Yeah, that's the old the Solomon Grundy line. He doesn't say it in this issue, but in a lot of his appearances, you know, there's that Solomon Grundy Solomon Grundy children's rhyme.
There is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like totally googling it right now. Oh, it's an English nursery rhyme?
Exactly.
Solomon Grundy, born on a Monday, christened on Tuesday, married on Wednesday, took ill on Thursday, grew worse on Friday, died on Saturday, buried on Sunday. That was the end of Solomon Grundy. No!
I know.
Okay.
So, yeah, wow. Kind of. Yeah, and so I don't want to give too much away about old Solomon Grundy, but I can say that he is a long-running DC villain.
Okay.
He was... ooh, I didn't know this. I just looked it up. Thank you, Internet. Created as an adversary for the Green Lantern. So, you know, we'll come to that a little later, I guess, because from
Jade.
1944, yeah.
Okay. Wow. All right. I never thought he would be an adversary because it seemed very much like he was an ally in this issue.
Yeah, no. As far as I know, almost all of his... I'll admit, earlier DC is not exactly my strong area.
Mm-hmm.
I think until then, kind of like he and Shade, in a way, are kind of might be from a similar boat of being just golden age villains.
Yeah.
Who kind of, I'm not going to speak about how much Solomon was used, but James Robinson kind of revitalized. But here we see on the cover probably something that might be considered a bit more of a traditional Solomon Grundy appearance, because he looks, you know, monstrous and swampy.
Okay. Yeah.
and fighting our hero.
I can't tell. Yeah, I didn't know he was like gray. I couldn't tell from the comics. Oh, wait a minute. It's because in the story itself, they were in a what is it called? They were in the sewers.
Yeah.
And it was dark, and it wasn't drawn like that. But I think this is drawn with the colors in mind.
Yeah, and almost all of the appearances in the comic, he either has like dramatic coloring, so either greens or blues, or it's really only on that last page in one random punch where you can see his kind of gray white skin.
Right, right.
But yeah, here's how he normally looks.
Mm-hmm.
So, this to me, this is like a very dramatic, action-packed, exciting cover. But, you know, also at the same time, there's something about Jack's face where he looks like slightly different than he has in some of the past covers. Or is that just me?
I have no idea how he looks like in the past covers. I don't remember. But I do feel like he reminds me of... This cover reminds me of, like, one of those Greek god epics. Ooh. Where, you know, what's that called? What's his name? Poseidon and stuff like that, because of the water. And the rod reminds me of the trident, I think. That's the...
Oh, wow.
That's the feeling that I get.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, see, now that you said Greek gods, I'm thinking of, like... maybe not the gods, but like the heroic ones, like what, like Perseus or Jason fighting was it Jason who fought the Minotaur?
I think so.
Yeah.
Jason and the Argonauts. Was it he or was it Hercules? I have no idea.
I know Hercules did not fight the Minotaur. I can't remember if it's Jason or not. I want to say it was, like, yeah, you know what? You know what? This is not Brent Talks half-remembered history. It is him saying, I like this. Another small detail about this cover I like that we see Jack's shadow generated from the cosmic rod. I like that.
Oh, wow, yes. Good job.
Yeah.
This is Tony Harris.
Mm-hmm.
We see you. Yeah. Cool, very cool.
Shall we move on?
Yes, please.
All right. You know, since the scene starts with Jack in his pirate boxers talking to your I'm going to say current comic book crush. I'm going to let you take it away.
Really? Okay.
Please.
All right. So over here in the first panel, we have the title, The Day Before the Day to Come. And there's this... Can you do the whole, like, written by who so-and-so? Because I can't really do that.
Oh, sure. Written by James Robinson, penciler Tony Harris, inker Wade Von Grobiger, colorist Gregory Wright, assistant editor Chuck Kim, editor Archie Goodwin, and I saved the letterer for last because we have a new letterer this time, which is just given as a single name, Gasper. And I'll admit I don't know who Gasper is, but, you know... Very good work for Gasper on this book. I really didn't know a difference in going from John Workman, who's kind of a lettering legend, to this. Yeah, very smooth.
All right. Okay. So, about this first page. I think this is Jack's office or apartment. I have no idea. Well, maybe it's his apartment. I have no idea. But he's like just... I love how slice of life it is. Like, yes. He's just there in his home clothes making coffee, and the shade, this, like, it's as if they're friends. It's as if they are not Starman and this, like, super immortal villain. Mm. It's just them like, hey, so you have to face this new villain. Oh, really? I have to? Hey. It's just so... I like it.
Yeah. I like that, too. I like the fact that all throughout this conversation over, you know, several pages, the action, the storytelling action, is Jack makes coffee for two.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, and they have pink cups. Pink is my least favorite color, but I love how, like, they... You see, again, the coloring, why is it pink, you know?
You know? I'm agreeing, yeah.
I know, right? And it's very subtle, I guess. Like, even in the first page, you see that all the cups, even the ones hanging over the sink, they are pink.
Yeah.
And they really stand out. And it's these things. It's like these seemingly insignificant things made a little more prominent with the color. And I think that's very, it's very smart and it's very intricate in that sense. Yeah, and I really like that.
Just to compliment the cups a little bit as well. This is why the show gets so long. We just get attracted by the minutiae. But I think, look at the design with the round and then, like, the almost pyramid-esque bottoms. I mean, they look like cups that belong in Jack Knight's apartment.
Yeah.
And it's just a small thing, but they're not, like, just normal coffee cups. They're funky.
Yeah, because he's, like, this person who likes funky stuff. And I also love how, like, even these things, in the broader universe, they belong to Opal City. Because Opal is not, like, your regular American city that you see in parallel universes. They are... This Opal City, I think, it always feels like it exists in an alternate universe. I don't know if I'm getting too technical here with parallel and alternate. But, yeah, it just feels that way. Like, it's this probable future. And this, even things like these, the design of all these things, they belong in this universe. Yes. It's very probable that they exist, even if this cup does not exist in real life, like our world.
Exactly.
I love that. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
What's next? Do you have anything to say about this?
I like that this, again, it's, I think I've talked about this before, that this whole kind of conversation about merit and kind of filling us all this in, it is kind of an info dump.
Right.
But it's a conversation. It's a patter. It's not just let me tell you about what you need to do to go save the day. It's like you said, these two friends just having that conversation about what they do, and because it has such a rhythm, such a patter to it, it doesn't necessarily feel like an info dump.
Right. And I also think that in order to move the plot forward, you sometimes have to
add, have
to have this. It's
yes,
inevitable, but it's more of like how they made it interesting enough for the readers to follow the story. And I feel like they really, to put it in dialogue, it's great. I like how there's this banter, I guess, between Jack and the Shade. Like, I'm not your amigo. Got that? I like that.
Yeah.
So that's in itself, that's one, every word or every sentence that they say is in a way loaded because it bears weight for the story. Like, okay, so by him saying I'm not your amigo, it, you realize, okay, there's this relationship between the both of them that isn't really a relationship. So, you know, things like that. I like how they've designed the dialogue to reflect each point that they're trying to make.
No, totally. And even, you know, when Jack is adding milk to his coffee and he's just doing the whole snatch souls. Are you for real?
Yeah,
It's not, you know, it's not just the simple telling the story. It is that conversation. And there's an informality to it. That really goes.
Yeah.
And so. Then I also like that, you know, it kind of works because since we've already seen exactly what they're talking about. What, 3 times now?
Right.
So it's...
The demons coming out of posters, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people disappearing.
Yup.
And what else do they talk about?
Well, and I guess the guy who we've been saying looks like Rasputin is probably Merit.
Right. Yeah, and also they do a bit of a throwback, right, to that issue that I liked, the one that they went back in time or something with Oscar Wilde. To
the
circus,
like the, yeah, the flashback, the times past.
Yeah, where the Shade met with Oscar Wilde.
Yeah.
Right? That one, right? So, yeah, so they, here we have the Shade tying that up with the current timeline.
Mm-hmm,
I think I feel like that this is basically what it is, and tells Jack about the portrait of Dorian Gray.
Mm.
Yeah, I've never read that though. So
me
I
neither.
Yeah, so I had to kind of Wikipedia it.
I did not, but so I just kind of, oh, Dorian Gray, I've heard of that. Yeah, he poster gets old, he doesn't. Okay, cool.
And then, yeah. Basically, that's the gist. Okay.
Teddy, shall we move to Ted and Michael?
Okay. Ted and Michael next.
Yeah.
I love this scene, you know? I loved it so much. It's like, if you guys are looking at the comic right now, you would see that this is, it looks like 5 of the same scenes. I like that. I don't know. It's such a welcome break from your regular. I want to say regular programming, but this is not TV. It's just, I don't know. It's structured so differently.
Yeah. No. It's
what are the terms? I have no technical terms to describe it. But
you know, honestly, I don't know what this type of layout would be called. But it is, you know, I've seen it in other comics where they have kind of a grid and then like the text blocks, or like just kind of almost turning it into almost a short story for a moment. But it's obvious what we're reading is what Ted's writing. And like you said, it is just, it's a little moment, but it's so different from what comes before and what after. It's very effective.
Yeah. I really, really liked the way they chose to construct the scene. Like, yes. it could be anything else, you know? But they did it like this, you know, stacked the panels, panels on top of each other, and like the time, you can feel the time again, you know, that we talked about this a few issues back, but you can feel the time, and it's really cool. And when the chills that come when you see Michael saying Teddy Pendergrass, and Ted's face. And then after that it goes back to normal, and then you probably realize that Ted has continued writing. Yeah.
And I'm going to return to this, you know, Tony Harris does such great acting with his drawings here. That look of surprise. It's really classic.
Yeah.
You know, we have no problems knowing how Ted feels about Michael's sudden speech.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a very nice way to put it. Tony Harris is acting with his drawing.
Yeah, that I think is one of the technical terms.
Oh.
I can't claim that one, but like, yeah, how someone is able to make the characters act.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know. Another thing I'm learning about comic books. Acting. Okay. Nash.
Nash. I gotta say, I appreciate that it's Willow the Wisp.
Right.
Is there?
I just noticed it. What was it again?
I know it's like one of those folktale things that is kind of a ghostly spectral figure.
Right.
You know, one of the main...
I remember it came up in a song that I know in Sound of Music. They called... so random. There's a song called Maria.
What do you do about a problem?
That's right. What do you call a problem like Maria and a Willow the Wisp? That was this line. Yeah, I think I get it. But I'm confusing it with that clown figure in the previous issue. It's not right.
Oh, no.
I forgot its name.
You mean Bliss?
No, the one that Ted.
Ragdoll.
Ragdoll. Okay, no. Okay, that's right. That one has a name. Ragdoll.
Yeah.
Willow the Wisp. Yes. What do you think is the significance of the Willow the Wisp? What is it? Is this Willow the Wisp on the glass of the door, an address or the name of the office?
I think it's the name of the office, you know, because she talks about she enters one of the hideaways her father had prepared. And I get the feeling, since he's the mist, and it's, you know, the Will-O-The-Wisp, very both kind of spectral figures, that in a way was a villain being clever.
Ah, I see. All right. We see Nash. She enters this hideaway, and we know that, I like how they kind of clue, I really love how they use words as well.
Yes.
Because they say velveteen kiss of the same dust beneath her feet. So it's probably not been touched in a long time.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it does kind of make you wonder, like, if this villain, the Mist is an old villain of Ted, and Ted's been around since an active figure since the 40s, I think, in this world, maybe even earlier. That how long has this machine just been sitting there?
Right.
So, I mean, yeah. We could be, you know, half a decade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then she intends to become something more with it.
Yep. I talked about it in the synopsis just now, but I won't know it. We won't know what exactly she becomes until we move on to the next issue, so... We'll save that for later, though.
We'll see. Yeah, we get more fun Nash times. Mm-hmm. And now we get some charity.
Yes! Rainbow Lady from the alley! I know, I call her Rainbow Lady because I remember the first time she appeared, there was a lot of pink.
Yeah. Not this time, but at the same time, because of the color scheme of it, with the mostly whites and the pops of just very vibrant colors, it kind of has that same dreamy feel to it.
It does. It reminds you of one of those, like, resort places. I don't know. Okay. We live in Japan, and sometimes we go to these big drinking parties that are kind of important. So they have it at, like, wedding... Yeah. What do you call it? What do you call those places?
Not wedding chapels, but like the reception places and the hotels and the the fancy and banquet rooms.
That's right, and some places really do look like that, like this. Like, I've been to a place in Japan that looks like this. It's really an elaborate place. It's not even a hotel. It's just a place people have made, like these companies have made for weddings. It's like the inside of a palace. Can guys imagine? This charity's place, and it's real. I'm serious. There's like even to the random hole in the middle where
there's like a pond. Lake and
that exists.
And kind of the relief carvings on the walls of like angels and such to be like, look, it's pseudo Christian in a way.
Yeah. Pseudo Christian's a good one. Yeah, exactly. So, it was very easy to imagine this place. for me.
See, now that you've said that, that's all I'm going to be seeing.
Oh, but well, next time you go to one of those drinks,
exactly. Party, like, I'm.
Where's Charity?
Where's your psychic?
Yeah. Oh, but that's gonna be cool. It will be one of those like real life fan fiction things. So, Charity, however, is very shocked to see Jack. I think we were also. I was not expecting this. I was not expecting Jack to come looking for Charity.
Yeah.
But he does.
Yeah. And he came to thank her, and they have the little talk. But you know, I also. I enjoy the fact that he's like, no, I came to thank you. Yeah, you helped me. You really did. So, by the way, I mean, not that I came here to, you know, get my future told, but can I get my future told?
Yeah. That's exactly what. And the worst thing is, Charity's like, you know, actually, no. He's like, why? And then, what's her name?
Sadie Falk.
Sadie Falk. She reminds me of one of those Takarazuka actresses.
I'm
a huge fan of Takarazuka, just in case you don't know already. Takarazuka is this all-female theater troupe in Japan who perform both the male roles and the female roles in musicals. So this type of get up actually exists on stage in Japan. Yeah, so I've seen it live dozens of times, but she does remind you of those.
She does because I was thinking, like, I've seen this and it looks like something that would be in like a It's somehow both very 90s and very like 90s wanting to be retro. But now that you said Takarazuka, it's like that's it. This is going to be one of those posters, and she'll have the heavily pancaked face, and there'll be the ingenue somewhere around here. Yes, and she's supposed to be the quasi cool bad girl, boy, whatever.
Yep, yeah.
Now here's something interesting that I just noticed right now. Go ahead and flip back to that first page.
Okay.
Now, do you see like the kind of near the pink cups? Do you see design on the towel on the wall?
Uh huh.
Now flip back to Sadie Falk.
Oh, is it the necktie?
Yeah.
Oh wow! What do you think it is?
Maybe
they're related or something.
I was looking at that and I was wondering, like, you know, in a way, the way Sadie Falk looks all retro and kind of throwback, and that, in a way, is one of the parts of Jack. Is he kind of is obsessed with older things?
Yeah.
Is that just kind of like a little, you know, a subtle thing of like, see, there's a connection between them. There's something here, rather than just here's a random character I'm using two times in a row,
right?
Or, you know, is it just I use this design, so it's kind of in my head? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, but if it were a thing, and you know, Jack were to look at her, and he would be, oh, that necktie, huh? He would think that, I think.
Yeah.
So, they've met before, though. I did not see that coming.
the random, the bump.
Yeah. You know, I actually remember when I read this, I actually remembered that Jack bumped into someone because it just felt a little too pronounced in that episode.
Yeah.
I didn't even recall it, whether it was a lady or a guy, or it was what kind, what were they wearing. It did not register. Yeah, until now. Oh, it was her. I haven't been conscientious enough to flip back to that issue to see if it were Sadie or not.
Oh yeah, totally was.
Okay. Huh.
And she definitely seems very dismissive towards Jack.
Yeah. she what, he even called her like I hope it was some menstrual thing and he called her
on
a
the
bitch.
Next page. The man oh man, what a bitch.
Yeah.
So question for you, you know, as a lady, mm-hmm. In something like this, mm-hmm. when you have a character like Jack who when he meets a woman who is maybe less than pleasant to him, mm. and he goes mm. right to menstrual problems.
Mm.
Is that kind of like a geez, are they ringing that bell again, or is it, you know?
I don't know if I will come under fire for this, but it did not strike me as I don't know. It did not strike me as one of those, oh man, not again things.
Mm. Under it? Fire! Okay, fire's done.
Yeah. But, you know, I get it. I get that people will be offended by things like that, but I also remember that this is fiction, and, you know, Jack is Jack. You know, he's not. He is. This is how he thinks. It's not representative of all the male characters in the book, or the people who created these lines for Jack to say, and it doesn't affect me in that way. I mean, Jack had sex with what's her name, the one
Octavia.
Octavia, yes, he. Isn't someone who would, I don't know, he doesn't, I always feel like that just points to him not being superficial. I don't know.
No, that, I was just curious, you know?
Mm.
Yeah, because you're right.
Yeah, there, but it's been a thing.
Hmm?
Yeah.
Well, and I think your
voice is breaking up.
Oh, is it? Oh, mm. no.
A little bit. No, now it's fine.
Okay.
Sorry, guys.
Haha. You know, I think you're right. Like, that is... Jack has definitely... You know, he's another person who doesn't always come off as pleasant. He sometimes is kind of a dope. I mean, he's a lovable dope. He's a great character, but he's not a pristine, always doing the right thing character. And I think in a way, like... Like, having that kind of, like, jeez kind of moment. It's like, oh, right, Jack sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But his heart's in the right place, right?
It is. He wouldn't be Starman in the first place if he weren't. But I think recently there's been some talk about the word bitch as well, like with how some women feel like it's very obviously gendered, it's as a derogatory term, I don't know, when I read that I was like, oh right, okay, I've never really thought about it that way. Yeah, so I don't know, it's why don't you do you if he said, oh man, what a bastard. It would be weird, right? I don't know.
Well.
What a bad person.
What a no good Nick she was. What a stinker.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I also think it has to do with the rhythm of the words.
Yeah.
When you read it, you know. Yeah, so, oh well. No, bottom line, I'm not offended because Jack is Jack.
And then Jack gets a phone call from Alan Scott, who is the original Green Lantern, his daughter. And if you recognize, Alan Scott was also mentioned when Ted was talking about... Ragdoll.
Right, when he was listing his buddies?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so Jade basically is saying, like, by the way, can you take care of Solomon Grundy for me? He's in your neck of the woods.
Mm-hmm. I like how there's like this like superhero network going on.
I like that too.
The grapevine or whatever. It's just totally random pop culture thing, but there was this Disney cartoon animated movie called Wreck-It Ralph.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And there was that thing with all the superheroes or the villains would be they were in like a, it looked a lot like a like an AA meeting. And like, you know, it just gives off that vibe to it where when you have like Jack and Jade communicating like that, they must be, maybe they meet at like circles.
I like the when stuff like that. I sometimes like to think about how she got his number. Like, do you think that like she called her dad, who had to like, oh sure, I have it written down somewhere just in case, you know, like maybe, for example, like maybe Alan has a book from Ted that's like, hey, if something ever happens to me, these are who you need to contact just in case.
Right.
Or if maybe there was a conversation somewhere where Alan had to call Ted to be like, by the way, my daughter wants your son's number. He's like, oh, really? She does? Well, she's a lovely girl. No, she just wants him to go fight a sewer monster. He's like, oh, well, right. Here's his number anyway.
Yeah. Or it could be they have a DC superhero Yellow Pages kind of thing. I'm saying Yellow Pages because this is like 1995,
yeah.
and the villain edition. And like, I don't know, they could pretty much have those and S Starman. I don't know who else is in who else.
Superman.
Yeah, oh, Superman.
Gone too far. No, that's
yeah, Starman. Oh yeah, and then the Knights. Things like that. I don't know.
You know, I like how we get the beginning of the phone call right up until it's Jade, and it's all that panel where he's eating, and then it goes to him going into the sewer in his, I guess, crime fighting vest.
Yeah.
And while it kind of talks about how awesome Jade is and kind of catches any readers up who's not familiar with her. The conversation he had with her is continued while he's in the sewers. It's just a great usage of space.
Right. Yeah, and the way I love the way how you know that the conversation goes on because of the parentheses.
Yeah.
They use it really well. And the box, it wasn't a bubble, it wasn't a speech bubble, it was a box.
Yeah,
it's a box. Yeah. So that they make it very clear. Like, it's very subtle if you don't really pay attention, but you, as in, you know, one of those things where you read it and then you don't realize that it's like this, or you perceive it like this because of the way it is designed. Mm. Yeah, so it's very much like that, I feel.
And even just the shading, like, you know, if you notice the text box of Jack's thoughts, you know, there's that slight yellow, and I guess the slight roundings around the edges too. Mm. But the phone conversation, it's on that white background. Just, you know, it's some just, I don't know, basic comic bookery, but that is not a technical term, by the way. just some basic comic bookery, but it makes it, you know, so clear. And sometimes even that little step just isn't done in other comics, and it does kind of muddy the waters a little. Or every now and then there's just like a color mistake. I remember from a few issues where the coloring in the text boxes weren't consistent.
Right.
But yeah.
Oh, I think Starman might spoil comics for me if I ever read other comics that are, like, you know, inferior in terms of art.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
We'll see. So what do you think of the appearance of Solomon Grundy?
Well, that was very classic. It was one of those, like, Godzilla type, like, you know, it, like, rise from the deep. Mm-hmm. It's very, it really pays tribute to the genre, I feel.
Yes.
Yeah. You can, like, totally imagine things like that happening. Mm.
And, you know, in a way, over this and the next couple of pages, speaking of paying tribute, it kind of reminds me of from a few issues ago where he had the fight with Crusher at the circus. But where's that one? You know, we talked about kind of the goofballiness of it.
Right, we did. Yeah,
none of that seems to be here. Even though the fight is short and has a very different ending, this seems much more visceral, less comic.
It does. The expressions and the, I don't know, the way his body is drawn when he falls, and the way he responds, it's like he is really a doll.
Yeah.
That's slammed to and fro. It's just like this limp puppet. Yeah. And that's why I think it's a lot more, it makes it a lot more, it looks a lot more painful.
Yeah.
That's the word. Yeah. So he gets pretty much slapped around by Solomon Grundy.
He really does. And there is that moment where Jack kind of seems outclassed, but then
what does he do actually? How he grabs his rod.
Yeah.
So he, for a while, he wasn't fighting with his rod. I think that's why.
Because it got knocked out at that first punch.
Right. That's why he was like a limp puppet. Yeah, so he finally gets his rod, and the rod is the thing that stops Solomon Grundy.
Mm.
But it's then after that it gets funny.
Yeah. Again, just spectacular acting.
Mm.
You hurt me. Why you hurt me?
Yeah. That was nice voice acting, by the way.
I just kind of want to acknowledge, I don't think we have to go into it too much, unless of course you feel a strong need to, but the whole Jack just kind of sharing some personal information and also sharing that he's always a sucker for a pretty girl.
Nah. Yeah. Did he say that?
Well, you know, I mean, when he's talking about Sally Purple.
Right. But you know, when you talked about that, I was so shocked that she died.
Yeah. That was a sudden, like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And that he never forgave her.
Yeah.
Like, wow. You hold grudges, dude.
Yeah. But the thing is, I think I don't know. I might be reading too much into it, but maybe he didn't forgive her for dying. I don't know. Before they could make up, they could make up, because he was very young. How old was he? I don't remember if they wrote it here, but that means he must have lost something, like experienced this kind of loss a lot earlier than most kids do, which probably changed him. And I guess his mom also died.
Yeah.
And then we have Sally Purple, who died.
But we don't know when Sally Purple died. I want to say in that issue we saw that his mother died when he was 6.
I see. I see now that after she was run down and killed by that drunk driver. Oh, but they didn't say whether that was when she was a kid or not. I see. Yeah, but we find out that, he has a soft spot for girls. And he would do anything for them. And I think we're not even talking girls that he is in a relationship with. Like, you know, it's just we're talking about people whom he dislikes.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe it's a really good thing we talk, because we can also address his just, you know, enjoying the feeling of feeling like a knight, feeling like a hero, feeling like he did something great.
Yeah.
And maybe it's that it's doing for someone who at his time is someone important to him, strengthens that feeling.
Someone whom he admires. Like one of those, I don't know, akogare. I don't know how to say that in English.
Oh, man, don't ask. That's,
Yeah. But he just really admires Jade, I think, at this point, to do this to even... He's not met her, I think. They've not met, but he's still, like, here in the sewer and fighting Solomon Grundy.
Yeah.
And eventually holding his hand and leading him out. You're hungry? What do you want to eat?
Frogs.
Oh. Come, let's bring it to my dad. Honestly, I think Ted... Oh, that's why I say he's going to be, like, you know, the new... hippest babysitter on the block for very special people.
Yeah. So I just wanna add one more thing to this, and just another compliment to James Robinson, because you know, I don't know about you, but when I read this, and when he talks about Jade and things like that, it makes me want to read about that character.
Right.
Like, it isn't just like, oh, here's someone I'm casually mentioning just to kind of give context and say a bigger world. Just like the way, the little bit in there, like the superhero and the, I don't know, there's something about his mentioning of her that would, like, if someone handed me a comic with Jade right now, I'd be like, all right, I would like to learn more about this person just because of how Jack talks about her.
Right, yeah. I totally get what you mean. It's one of those things where a writer writes characters so well that it's not enough to just be satisfied with canon. And then, you know, sometimes when there aren't any other alternatives given to us by the author, people start to write fan fiction. So I get what you mean. Mm. Yeah, Jade, you do want to read more about her. And even Sally Purple.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I would read that. But we don't get Sally Purple or Jade. We get Nash.
Looking smoking.
I'll admit it. She does look kind of hot and naked here. I'm just going to throw that out there. Kind of evil, but, you know, kind of hot.
And I say smoking because she really looks like she has smoke.
She's smoking. She has mist powers now.
Hmm.
I mean, I'm just assuming, because it's her dad's machine.
Right. Yeah. But it's interesting. There's this narration that goes on while Nash is operating the thing. And it just makes us wonder how... Like, she does not have knowledge of the science behind the machine, but she operates the machine. She must be kind of smart. Like,
yeah.
I mean, not even kind of, like, she must have a very good memory, at least, like, to really, because she doesn't know what she's, like, how she's doing it. She just knows what she has to do.
And she knows her father.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like the fact that because it kind of says she doesn't know the science, it doesn't give us any sciency terms. It doesn't give us the pseudoscience. It's just like, you know, the light that tap dance, the big machine that had the bullfrog sound, and it is something that is poetic and not, you know, because she wouldn't know, oh, this is making the microns, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, and it also gives us an insight to her the way she perceives things, a daddy bullfrog and the bright light from the energy that tap danced. It's very, it's almost childlike.
Yes.
The way they portray her. Mm. I mean, it's consistent with the way her brother, I think, was his name Kyle?
Kyle.
The way he, Kyle, the way he treated her, like, you know, she was something to be protected, like, and the Nash from way back where she said no more killing and stuff like that. Very little, just a little girl. Yeah.
There's definitely that stunted childhood.
Yeah. They remind us of it here.
Which, even though she looks, you know, like she's moving up in the world of evil, there's a definitely a sense of tragedy that comes with it.
Right. Yeah. Those one of those are, what do you call it, robbed of it, her innocence and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. And I mean, she might even argue, and that kind of also adds to it, is because in a way her innocence was indirectly robbed by Jack.
Took away her brother and dad.
Yeah. Or I mean, the dad thing, that's not, you know, she didn't really care that much, but it was the loss of her brother, it seems, that really pushed her on this path.
Right. Okay, so we are moving on to the very last page. Yes,
well, the second to last, second to last.
Second to last?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's the second to last.
But, oh my goodness, what a second to last page it is. The double page spread here.
Double page spread. I know. It's very dedicated. Very dedicated to the story. But I love that.
I know. like this would be, you know, one of those. You can almost see this on a screen of the characters flashing in.
Yeah.
And it's very powerful.
One of the most powerful double page spreads that we've had so far. We have Opal in the background.
Yes.
And we see these staggered panels depicting, you know, characters that we've seen so far, and the close-ups, the I majored in communication in university, and we had to like do film modules and stuff, and there would be like these names for different types of shots, and like there would be things called like a big close-up where you have like only the face, and then you have like a mid shot which is like waist up and stuff like that, and there's a variety of those in these panels. You know, we call MCU, it's called a mid close-up, I think, right? Shade, you know, just chest up, and then, you know, it's varying, and that's very interesting for me as well. If it were just one shot, or the same, you know, like, headshot, it would look a lot like a yearbook, but this is not... This is not it. This is like one of, it's very dramatic. It's very, it's almost like theatrical. I really like it.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And I like how, because of how it's used, and maybe this is just because I've read this so many times, that the inclusion of Opal City and the very, just, you know, how stylistic Opal City is kind of adds that, you know, these are all the major characters, and Opal City is a character in here.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but there are some characters that I don't recognize. The last two on the right, I don't...
So the very last one, has not appeared in this comic yet.
Okay, good. I thought I missed something. Okay.
And, you know, honestly, I'm trying to decide who that second to last one after Hope O'Dare.
Yeah.
They are, because I'm not sure if that is supposed to be just the other O'Dares. Because we've got Matt, we've got Hope, and then we've got the other three. Yeah. And I'm not sure if that's supposed to be the other three brothers, because I think it is five of them. Or if that's supposed to be just other folk. So that's, you know.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
Huh.
Last page,
we see...
Nash.
Nash. She is turning into mist.
Yeah. And it's great, because this is, it's just how we saw the mist earlier, with the kind of not shadowy but smoky body, and but she's got those glasses from Kyle, and the red of the lipstick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all these like things blowing away from her. It's almost like a fabric, but it's not.
Yes. It almost looks like a Marilyn Monroe-esque glamour shot.
It does, it does. Yeah. By the way that the mist is drawn reminds me of like ukiyo-e.
Oh, like, yeah.
You know, that very classic wave one.
Yes, it does. I did not notice. That is nice.
Yeah, so I like that. And then, of course, we have the end at the end.
Mm-hmm. Even though it's not the end of the beginning.
Yeah.
I think I'm just going to flash ahead to 11. Does it give us how many of it? No, it doesn't tell us how many issues it is. But, okay. Yeah, that's... Ooh, I hope we actually have to wait a little bit. Because the next issue is another Times Past.
Oh,
and
okay.
And then... Issue 12 is when this storyline starts, and it's a 5-issue storyline, so I'm excited.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah.
And this issue is called The Day Before the Day to Come, so it really whets your appetite. And
yes.
Can you imagine you in, as a kid in 1995, and August, you're like, oh, wow, this is such an amazing issue. And then, the next month comes around, and you're like, oh,
what do you mean?
Yeah, what do you mean we have to wait? Mm.
So, we got to start wrapping this up. I'll admit, in the real world, I'm about to have to go do some playing with my baby, so my wife can go do some work.
Okay.
But I just wanted to do a quick last minute wrap up of this issue.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed it. I think it sets up a lot of important things. Gave us some great character beats. Some mm-hmm. wonderful moments. If I had to give it some criticism, if I had to, I would say that seeing as how issue 9 was also an issue that felt very kind of like prologue-y, that in a way having 9 and 10 both kind of setting the stage for action to come with not quite as much of their own unique full story in them. Does kind of feel, you know, I think if I were just sitting down and reading them in a lump, I wouldn't even notice it, because they're just, they read so well and they bleed so well into each other. But since, you know, I'm reading those at the pace we're recording these episodes, it does kind of feel like I want a little more from each individual bite.
Right, right, right.
But outside of that, fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with you.
Well, is that all? Or
that is all. I'm very, but I do have one thing.
Do it.
It's totally random.
Do it.
Jack's tattoo, it's, you know, the kanji on his left upper arm.
Mm.
Is it trying to say that he's talented? I have no idea.
Oh, I didn't even know that was an actual kanji.
Like it's talent in Chinese. It could be interpreted as just a part of a kanji, but that would mean like hand, and that does not make sense.
Huh.
So I don't know.
You know, yet another reason where I'm really glad you are on the show. Because you help fill in those gaps of knowledge.
Oh, yay!
Why do I feel like suddenly sound like an idiot? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Nice.
It should be talent, because if it were hand, it would be the stroke for the third stroke would look a bit different. The end would taper upwards, not down. But yeah, this is just one thing. I'm sorry, I'm such a nerd.
Oh, yeah, because obviously nothing I say on this show comes off nerdy. Nothing at all. Why are you bringing this show down with nerdiness? This show basically serving just to talk about a single comic book line. We don't have time for nerdiness, Lydia.
Yeah, okay, sorry. I'm so sorry, Brent. No more. Yeah, no, down with nerdiness. Nothing is nerdy on this show.
If you bring actual knowledge into this comic book based world again, we're gonna have to have a talk.
Yeah, we shall throw many towels. Sorry, no idea where that came from. Okay, where can they find you on the internet, Brent?
They can find me deadlytroubadour.com, or they can go to Twitter, where I'm at deadtroubadour. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I have a Brent Thomas author page on Facebook. You can like that. If you just want to like something for the show, there's the Comics League International page. And then, you know, on iTunes, why don't you give it a rating, a review. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know how we can make the show better for you. For you. Oh, also, feel free to give to my Patreon page. It's in the links. Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you, Lydia?
Okay. Me, I'm not very active on YouTube right now, but you can find me on YouTube. You can also find me on Twitter and on Facebook at Quek Channel. That's Quek Channel. And, of course, you can find me here with Brent. Which is the only like regular thing that I'm doing right now.
And as always, a lot of those links are in the what you call them, the show notes. If you're listening through this on an iPhone, you can just give a click on our names and it should take you to our places. Unless I've messed it up, in which case let me know because I need to fix that. Nerds.
Okay.
Cool. Well, thanks for listening, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Brent.
Thank you, Lydia. Thank you for talking.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Jack and Ted and Michael and
and James and Wade and Tony.
All right, and Tony. Yeah. Bye. There's a star man waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a star man waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, 'cause he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children lose it, let the children use it, let all the children boogie.